Ladies and gentlemen of this joint assembly and honored guests, I am proud and honored to present to you the Honorable Henry Dargan McMaster, our governor of the great state of South Carolina. Governor.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Be seated, please. Well, I'm delighted to be here again. You notice I'm a little hoarse. I think I was hollering too loud for the Lady Gamecocks the other night, maybe. Delighted to be here, Mr. President, ladies and gentlemen, General Assembly, my fellow South Carolinians. We are here tonight to address successes, challenges, and opportunities. But first, as in prior years, I'd like to recognize those in uniform whom we lost in the line of duty in the last year, in 2024. And I'll call their names. Firefighter Michael Douglas Vinson of Lawrence County Fire Department and the Clinton Fire Department. Officer First Class Mark Reynolds of the South Carolina State Transport Police. Chief Chad Satcher of the Circle Fire Department. Firefighter Landon Cale Boddy of the Circle Fire Department. K-9 Agent Koba with the State Law Enforcement Division. K-9 Deputy Mika with the Lee County Sheriff's Office. K-9 Deputy Boomy with the Richland County Sheriff's Department. K-9 Deputy Kodak with the Richland County Sheriff's Department. And K-9 Deputy Wick with the Richland County Sheriff's Department. To the families and loved ones of these brave South Carolinians and their trainers, we offer our condolences. We are eternally grateful for their service. I'm delighted to have with us once again tonight our First Lady, my favorite bride and wife, Peggy Jean, our son Henry Jr. and his wife Virginia, our two-year-old granddaughter Margot May Gray is at home, also our daughter Mary Rogers, her husband Sam Herskovitz, and our two-and-a-half-year-old grandson James Dargan and four-month-old granddaughter Lucille DeBose. Couldn't make it tonight either, but they are watching us on TV, so please stand and let's give them all a hand. Welcome. Thank you. Also, our Lieutenant Governor Pamela Evatt and her husband David are here tonight, and our state constitutional office holders. Will you all please stand and be recognized? Thank you. Thank you. And finally, will members of the best cabinet in the nation please stand and be recognized? Thank you all. There they are. And I'd like to say as I start that being selected by the people of this state to serve you, the people who know me the best, is among the highest honors that there is, and I thank you for that, for this opportunity. Thank you. I want to tell you a little bit about South Carolina. If you're not interested in history, I urge you to pick up this book. It's written by Dr. Walter Edgar. It's got a lot in it. If you think you might not be very interested in history, pick it up and look through it, and you will find something about you or your family or something much relevant to your life in this book. We ought to all know the history of our state because it has made us great. Now, here are a few facts. South Carolina consists of about 20 million acres, half a million covered by water today. About 2.3 million acres are developed, and about 3.1 million are protected. We have over 22,000 farms, over 8 million acres of forest land, over 5.3 million people, of which over 860,000 are K-12 students, over 188,000 businesses, a major port, a temperate climate, mostly nuclear power, and occasional hurricanes. So the question is, how are we doing? We're doing great, but we got work to do in a number of places. We got some decisions to make. About our economy, our South Carolina economy is booming once again, and has created a large budget surplus this year, totaling over $1.8 billion in unexpected revenue. It was no surprise that 2024 was once again successful for us in economic growth and investment. In fact, 2024 was the third best in state history, with $8.2 billion in capital investment and 5,500 new jobs announced. This followed the second best year in 2023 and the very best in 2022. Because of our unmatched workforce and business-friendly policies, companies already located in South Carolina reinvested in our state with over $5.3 billion in announced capital investment through expansion projects in 2024. The top three leading industries by capital investment were information technology with $4.1 billion, automotive with $1.3 billion, aerospace and aviation with $1 billion. Domestic companies make up 67% of 2024 capital investment, while international companies made up 33%. Since 2017, we have announced over $44.7 billion in new capital investment and over 92,000 new jobs in our state of South Carolina. I'd like to recognize several of the businesses which announced their confidence in our people by investing that capital in 2024. If the leaders will stand as I name your company, stand when I name your company, and we will respond when you are all standing. In Spartanburg County, AFL, which has called South Carolina home for 40 years, they will expand its existing fiber optics facilities to create an additional 150 jobs with a $155 million investment. Welcome Mr. Jackson Lang, Chief Executive Officer, if you will stand but hold your applause till the end. Charleston County, Boeing is investing another $1 billion, in infrastructure upgrades and will create 500 new jobs. Welcome Ms. Erin Fisher, Head of Global Engagement. In Greenville County, Inesis is growing its presence in the state by investing $500 million for a lithium-ion cell gigafactory that will create 500 new jobs. Please welcome Mr. Sam Shiroff, Senior Director of Global Sustainability. In the Lowcountry, Google will grow its South Carolina footprint by establishing two new data center campuses in Dorchester County and expanding its existing data center campus in Berkeley County. This combined investment of $3.3 billion will create 200 new jobs. Welcome Mr. Edie Walters, Data Center Operations Manager. In Spartanburg County, Keurig, Dr. Pepper, a leading producer of hot and cold beverages, will continue to grow its operations with a $141 million investment and 84 new jobs. Please welcome Mr. Chuck Hollingsworth, Director of Engineering and Operations. In Greenville County, Magna, one of the largest suppliers in the automotive industry, is establishing a new satellite operation and expanding its existing operation with a combined $200 million investment and 200 new jobs. Please welcome Mr. David Meyer, Vice President of Operations. In Oconee County, Mine America is expanding with a $50 million investment, creating 172 new jobs for a state-of-the-art manufacturing equipment facility for the poultry industry and the corporate headquarters. Please welcome Mr. Michael Otterbach, Vice President of Operations. Also, our Secretary of Commerce, Harry Lightsey, and his remarkable team, which worked around the clock to produce these successes. Please stand. Please, we thank you all. We boomed in 2024, and we're going to boom again in 2025. Thank you. Every day, employers are creating new jobs, entrepreneurs are operating new businesses, and companies are deciding to locate in South Carolina. However, the competition between states, especially in the Southeast, is fierce. Whether it's lower taxes, less regulation, plentiful power, quality education, our natural and cultural resources, a trained and healthy workforce, or unmatched livability, South Carolina's future prosperity requires that we constantly work to maintain or develop competitive advantages in the ever-accelerating race for new jobs and investment. This includes our reputation of high military appreciation, solid law enforcement, low big labor participation, and the friendliest people on the face of the earth. How about income taxes? Our state government is in superior fiscal shape. We continue to maintain our largest rainy day reserve fund balance and low amounts of general obligation debt. Again, saving money instead of spending it has served our state well and ensures that we will always be prepared for future economic uncertainties. Until a few years ago, South Carolina had the highest personal income tax rate in the Southeast, highest in the Southeast. That's not good. 12th highest in the nation. No more. 3 years ago, I signed into law the largest income tax cut in state history to drop the personal income tax rate from 7% to 6% over a period of 5 years. Our booming economy has created annual budget surpluses that have allowed us to accelerate these tax cuts faster than anticipated. This year, I'm proposing that we cut the state's personal income tax rate again from 6.2 down to 6%, allowing taxpayers to keep an additional $193.5 million of their hard-earned money in their pockets instead of sending it to the state government. However, we should not stop at 6%. As I say, competition is fierce. We should keep cutting as much as we can, as fast as we can, until we can eliminate the personal income tax for our people altogether. Mr. Speaker, Mr. President, this is what the people want, and ladies and gentlemen, that's what we're going to give them. Our economic prosperity requires us to maintain consistency and certainty in our permitting processes. They must be thorough, they must be reasonable, and they must be prompt. Uncertainty is the enemy of prosperity. Our state's booming economy has dramatically increased the demand for permits. Permits required to expand a business, permits to construct a new facility or deliver additional power and infrastructure, like water and sewer. One of my first goals for the newly created cabinet agency, the Department of Environmental Services, was to eliminate any backlog of permit decisions and to establish a hard 90-day deadline for these decisions to be made. I'm recommending an appropriation of $13.7 million so the department can hire and train the employees they need to get this done. I believe that you should be able to mark your calendar to circle that date with a bright red marker and know when a decision will be made. How about our laws and regulations in labor? State laws and regulations are designed to protect the public, but also to ensure that individuals have the freedom to pursue their chosen careers without undue interference. Over the years, the General Assembly has created over 42 different professional and occupational licensing boards run by 350 appointed board members who license and regulate over 500,000 South Carolinians in the workplace. They oversee accountants, architects, barbers, builders, cosmologists, chiropractors, contractors, doctors, dentists, nurses, morticians, nurses, optometrists, pharmacists, realtors, social workers, just to name a few, and we're just up to the S's. Each year, the licensing of these professions seems to become more and more complicated and burdened. I agree with you, my colleagues, that it's time we pause, review the laws that created these boards along with their statutory requirements, and determine whether they are necessary, effective, and balanced. How about tort reform? For future economic prosperity, it is required that our state's civil justice system allows fair and prompt enforcement of our laws and proper redress of injury. This should not stifle creation and economic growth of jobs. Yet the application of our current legal framework and rules are increasingly making South Carolina, what, less competitive. The rules on joint and several liability have introduced an element of uncertainty, and uncertainty is the enemy of prosperity. Ask anybody in the room. Individuals and businesses, both large and small, are becoming unduly penalized for the actions of others, too often through crippling financial judgments and skyrocketing insurance premiums. I ask you, the General Assembly, to find a common sense solution, one that will provide accountability, certainty, and just compensation, but without damaging our economy, and one that I can sign into the law the moment it reaches my desk. Let's do that. 2 years ago, it became clear that we have a mental health crisis in South Carolina. What wasn't clear was how bad it was. As a result, I propose that we initiate and fund an immediate review of the state's behavioral health funding and delivery system. The analysis confirmed what many of us feared, only much worse. South Carolina, it was determined, has the most fragmented and siloed health and human service delivery system in the nation. Lowest in the nation, the lowest ranking. This causes unnecessary suffering of our people. Our people with physical disabilities, special needs, and mental health issues seeking assistance must navigate through a confusing landscape of offices, agencies, and officials as they seek help for a loved one or a dependent or even themselves. We learned that 77% of our state's young people with major depressive episodes do not receive mental health treatment. Suicides have become the routine and not the exception. Our communities have a growing number of homeless people, many of whom have untreated mental, physical, or substance addiction problems. They fall through the cracks. They fall through the cracks of a system that does not coordinate, communicate, or collaborate. We must fix this. I am certain that everyone in this room has a family member, a close friend, or someone they love who is experiencing these problems right now. Right now. Immediate changes are needed at the Department of Mental Health and the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs. They are run by a board of commissioners who are accountable to no one, and it is virtually impossible for a governor to remove them. And we know, if everyone is charged, then no one is in charge. South Carolinians should be able to hold one person, one, their governor, accountable for the actions of the Department of Mental Health and the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs. That's not the way it is now. That was the notion that fueled Governor Carol Campbell's successful effort to begin the restructuring of state government agencies in the early 1990s. This year, let's finish this job with the stroke of a pen by making the Department of Mental Health and the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs cabinet agencies that are directly and immediately accountable to the governor. And let this legislative session be the one remembered for the year that we finally move this into the future for our people. Also, South Carolina has been identified as part of the stroke belt, with high stroke and dementia mortality rates. Current neurological care options in the state are limited. This forces our people to seek care outside of the state. What's this do? Delays early diagnosis and treatment, may extend hospital stays, and creates significant financial burdens. Today, we have a once-in-a-generation opportunity to create a world-class neurological facility for critical care procedures, rehabilitation services, and leading-edge research in the field of neurology. I propose that the General Assembly, you, provide funding to the Department of Health and Human Services for the construction of this new neurological hospital, which will house an 80-bed critical care unit and a 32-bed neurological rehabilitation unit, both operated by the University of South Carolina. How about our state health plan? It provides medical, vision, dental, and pharmacy insurance coverage for over 543,000 South Carolinians. School districts, teachers, and employees make up 41%. Government and retirees make up 37%. State agency employees, including higher education, 21%, and local boards, 1%. This year will mark the fourth year in a row that the state health plan, administered by the Public Employee Benefit Authority, known as PEBA, has requested an additional $112 million to offset health care provider cost increases and to simply maintain existing insurance benefits. That's almost half $1 billion in 4 years. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not fiscally sustainable. If the General Assembly chooses to continue appropriating these funds, I recommend they require a new cost containment requirement. PEBA should be required to identify and propose cost-saving measures for the state health plan in order to slow the cost increases to a manageable level. How about power? The future depends on electric power. We know that our economic prosperity requires us to have abundant and affordable energy, and sometimes it's getting close, even now. We know that we will need more, and questions are how much and how will it be produced and how will it be transmitted. Our electric generation distribution and transmission capacity and capabilities must be able to handle enhanced future economic development, anticipated technological advances, and our population growth, because we are growing fast. We must vigorously explore the feasibility of technological advances related to energy production. Limitations and obstacles on the state's ability to receive and utilize natural gas must be removed immediately. We must prepare now for a future driven by nuclear power generation on scales both large and small. We must identify any modifications or additions to existing laws, regulations, policies, or procedures that may be necessary to meet these needs. 2 years ago, we created the Power SC Working Group. They began leading the effort to coordinate the state's energy stakeholders. Next came South Carolina Nexus, SC Nexus, for Advanced Resilient Energy Consortium, developed by our Department of Commerce. This is a collaboration, again, with our research universities, technical colleges, state agencies, the Savannah River National Lab, economic development nonprofits, and private businesses. Then, we won the U.S. Department of Commerce's Economic Development Administration's coveted designation as one of the 12 regional technology and innovation hubs in the whole country. There were 400 applications from the 50 states. We were one of 12, and we won it. That qualifies us for federal research grant funding valued between $40 and $70 million annually. What did we focus on? What were we going to study? Power. Electric power. Last week, Santee Cooper began the process of gauging the feasibility of and the interest in restarting the construction of two abandoned nuclear reactors at the VC Summer Nuclear Station. I believe that restarting these two reactors in South Carolina will not only help fuel our state's future power needs, but will also usher in a nuclear power renaissance across the United States, one that will spur nationwide investment and construction of new nuclear power generation that will provide America with ample, clean, resilient energy for the future and deter challenges to our national security. And remind you, for many years, our nuclear submarines have been operating. They're calculated to operate with one recharging for 50 years. Nuclear power is a lot of power. Last year, the General Assembly was able to reach consensus on legislation that would have addressed many of our future energy needs. But we didn't finish. We need this legislation. We're running out of time. I ask that you send this legislation to my desk so that I can sign it into law. And let's hurry. Again, our state's roads, bridges, highways, and interstates are the arteries of our prosperity. They need continued investment. Can't stop. The Department of Transportation has made tremendous progress in repairing and improving our transportation system. They have delivered a valuable return on our investments with the strong help of the executive and the legislative branches. For instance, in 2017, there were just $2.7 billion in road construction projects underway in our state. Today, we have $6.5 billion in projects happening in all 46 counties, and there's more work to be done. Our bridges are aging. The Department of Transportation reports that around 2,400 of our 8,400 bridges are at a point of replacement or major repair. Without continued acceleration of investment, that number will swell to 3,900 in 10 years. To that end, I'm recommending to you an additional $100 million be appropriated to the Department of Transportation to continue accelerating bridge construction across our state. This brings us to disaster relief. Everyone here will recall that before sunrise on Friday, September 27, 2024, Hurricane Helene struck South Carolina. It is tragically the deadliest storm to ever hit our state, with 49 confirmed deaths, which surpassed Hurricane Hugo, which had 35 confirmed deaths, tragically. The damage from Helene was devastating. About at least 6,300 homes were damaged. It spawned 21 tornadoes. Our agribusiness industry suffered at least $621 million in damages. They always underestimate. 912 roads and bridges were closed, and 10 bridges must be rebuilt, all due to that hurricane. At its peak, nearly 1.36 million customers in our state were without electricity, more than Florida and Georgia combined. Trees and utility lines were snarled together, blocking roads and bridges, creating dangerous and deadly entanglements that are danger to get close to them, making it impossible to quickly clear the roads, repair damage to property, and get the power back on. But our team responded magnificently, and joining us here tonight are a few of the men and women who worked then, day and night, some for weeks at a time, at dangerous heights, under dangerous conditions, and around deadly high-voltage electricity to get the power on. Linemen from Duke Energy, Dominion Energy, Santee Cooper, and from the local electric cooperatives, Aiken, Broad River, Blue Ridge, Coastal, Fairfield, Lawrence, Little River, Mid-Carolina, Newberry, and York, I ask that you please stand and be recognized. Thank you. Team South Carolina moved quickly to provide access to disaster relief and assistance from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. We held seven county day events, providing over 3,700 residents in 17 counties with a day-long one-stop shop location to apply for federal and state financial assistance, receive critical information and services, and donated goods. Volunteers distributed over 3,500 cases of bottled water, over 3,300 boxes of food, 900 bags of charcoal, 658 grills, 616 cases of diapers, and 300 tarps. In addition, we held 3-day-long farm and forest recovery resource days, first ever, were held for hundreds of farmers, foresters, and agribusiness owners impacted by Helene, providing them with access to federal and state financial relief and resources. Over $5 million in Helene contributions were made to the One South Carolina Fund at Central Carolina Community Foundation, and that's the most that's ever been donated to the fund for a single storm since it was created in 2015. For a little perspective on the damage from Helene, consider this. To date, South Carolinians have submitted over 441,000 applications, 441,000 applications for individual financial assistance to FEMA for Helene damage. Compare that to the combined number of applications, 164,000 submitted for the flood of 2015, Hurricane Matthew in 2016, and Hurricane Florence in 2018. That's a lot of applications. So far, only $150 million in community disaster recovery block grants from the Department of Housing and Urban Development have been awarded to South Carolina from the $110 billion relief package approved by Congress in December. We know that there will be additional federal funds designated for our state, but we don't know if it will be enough. And while we got FEMA to reimburse 100% of South Carolina's cleanup costs for 120 days, significant state funds will be necessary to pay for costs above and beyond federal assistance. For example, the Department of Transportation needs an additional $50 million in this year's state budget to cover costs related to debris removal and repairs to roads and bridges, costs that were not reimbursed by the federal government. The Office of Resilience needs an additional $40 million to replenish the 2 disaster relief and resilience reserve funds. Both the grant fund and revolving loan fund were utilized to provide immediate relief and resources on the ground to people impacted by Helene. I'm recommending that $150 million be appropriated to create the South Carolina Public Assistance Program to be administered by the South Carolina Emergency Management Division. What will it do? This state grant program will mirror the federal program at FEMA. It will allow local governments, public utilities, nonprofits, charitable aid organizations to apply for state disaster recovery funds, funds that were either denied by the federal government or did not meet federal FEMA thresholds for damage reimbursement. That's how we take care of our people. Educating our children is the most important thing we do. I'll say it again. Educating our children is the most important thing to do. Our future prosperity requires that we continue the progress we have made, remarkable progress, in raising teacher pay. Eight years ago, the minimum starting salary of a teacher in South Carolina was $30,113. And the average teacher salary was well below the Southeastern average. I propose that we begin raising the minimum starting teacher salary as much as possible each year, with a goal of raising it to at least $50,000 by 2026. Today, the minimum starting salary in South Carolina is $47,000, and the average teacher salary now exceeds the Southeastern average. That's progress. This represents an increase of 56.1% in 8 years in teacher pay. South Carolina's minimum starting teacher salary is now higher than both Georgia and North Carolina. higher than both Georgia and North Carolina, but will that keep and attract the best and brightest teachers? That is why I ask you tonight to raise our minimum starting teacher salary to $50,000 this year, not next year. In this race for the future, we must be the fastest if we're going to win. With us tonight is Jessica Owens, kindergarten teacher at Rocky Creek Elementary School in Lexington County, School District 1. Ms. Owens began her career in education as a classroom assistant to a wonderful kindergarten teacher who encouraged her to pursue education as a career. In 2021, she returned to Columbia College, where she completed her degree in early childhood education and began her career as a teacher. Over the past several years, Ms. Owens has witnessed the impact of our state's commitment in raising the minimum starting salary for teachers. What'd she say? She told me, quote, by having competitive pay, school districts can attract more candidates to the field, ensuring that schools are staffed with the best possible teachers, which ultimately benefits the students. We all know that. Ms. Owens joins us tonight, along with her classroom assistant, Brittany Udrata. Please stand and be recognized. Thank you. Since the statewide expansion of full-day four-year-old kindergarten program in school year 21-2022, enrollment in the program in public schools, private child care centers, and private schools has increased significantly. Today, over 18,000 students are enrolled in the program. The Office of First Steps anticipates a 7% increase in the number of children from low-income households that will enroll in the program in the next school year. I am proposing that we continue making additional investments in our highly successful 4K programs. The data has shown that a child from a low-income household enrolled in a state-funded full-day 4K program is more likely to possess the skills to learn than their peers who do not participate. We must do that. This brings us to school choice. This week is National School Choice Week. I ask that the General Assembly send to my desk as soon as possible a new education scholarship trust fund bill, one that addresses last year's state Supreme Court decision. Parents, not school attendance lines, should determine the education that best suits their child's unique needs. In anticipation of success, I'm proposing that $30 million be appropriated to the trust fund. These funds will allow low-income parents to continue choosing the type of education environment and instruction that best suits their child's unique needs. In addition, I'm asking the General Assembly to consider allowing education lottery tickets to be purchased using debit cards. Only three states require cash-only purchases: South Carolina, Tennessee, and Wyoming. Many businesses no longer accept cash, and many people don't carry cash anymore. Education lottery proceeds are down now, $31.9 million, and expected to continue dropping because people don't have cash in their pockets. But they have a debit card. The Lottery Commission estimates that debit card purchases, not credit cards — debit card, the money's in the bank, credit cards, you're borrowing it, not credit cards — would generate an additional $52 million that could be used for the Education Scholarship Trust Fund or for Life, Hope, and Palmetto Fellow College scholarships. It's a good idea. How about safety in the schools? Placing an armed, certified, full-time school resource officer in each of our state's 1,284 public schools has been one of my top priorities. At my request, the General Assembly began funding an SOR program, grant program administered by the Department of Public Safety. It provides school districts with funds to hire full-time SROs for schools without one. This program has been enormously successful. In 2018, only 406 schools had an SRO. In 2024, it grew to 1,106. That means there are only 177 schools in South Carolina today without a school resource officer. I ask the General Assembly, let's finish this job. Fully fund this grant program so that every public school child in South Carolina will have an officer on campus providing safety for children and teachers and comfort for their parents. There are a lot of ways to do things, ladies and gentlemen. There are a lot of ways to get to from where you live to Pawleys Island, or get to Edisto Beach, or get to the river, or get to Jocassee. But there's only one way for a child to get through to prosperity, and that is going through that schoolhouse door. We've got to get them in those schools, and they have to be safe. Our future prosperity requires that our colleges, universities, and technical colleges be accessible and affordable to all, that our institutions of higher education produce a trained and skilled workforce, one that allows us to win jobs and investment in the future. This is the sixth consecutive year that I call for a freeze in college tuition for in-state students in exchange for a metric-based appropriation to our public colleges and universities. And for the fourth straight year, I seek $80 million so that every South Carolinian who qualifies for federal need-based financial aid as measured by the Pell Grants has sufficient financial assistance to attend any in-state public college, university, or technical college. Students at private, independent, and historically black institutions will receive an additional $20 million for tuition grants and assistance. I request $95 million in lottery funds for workforce industry needs scholarships through the South Carolina Technical College System. In the last 5 years, this very successful program has paid the full tuition and fees for over 40,000 South Carolinians at our technical colleges, where they earn post-secondary or industry credentials in high-demand careers like manufacturing, nursing, computer science, information technology, transportation, logistics, or construction. Because of our state's high demand for workforce skills, training, and knowledge, I renew my call for this General Assembly to fund and authorize a systemic review of our state's 33 public institutions of higher education. This review will be conducted by the Department of Employment and Workforce. The goal, to make sure we are preparing to meet our state's future workforce needs in two respects. One, sustainability, accessibility, and affordability. And two, alignment of our programs, certificates, and degrees with job skills and innovations likely to be coming our way. As for law enforcement, our future prosperity requires that we keep our communities safe. This means what? Funding the police and giving them the tools they need. Last year, I told you that law enforcement needed help. They told us so. They needed a stronger law to keep illegal guns out of the hands of criminals and juveniles, which would help closing the revolving door. You acted. You acted. And on March 7, 2024, I signed into law graduated criminal penalties for illegal gun possession. I am pleased to report that in less than a year, according to SLED, there has been an 86% increase in the number of arrests using the new law. 2,412 arrests, up from 1,295. That is progress. A few years ago, we tasked our Department of Administration with conducting a comprehensive analysis of state law enforcement pay to ensure that salaries were competitive to attract and retain top-tier talent. It worked. As a result, South Carolina's law enforcement officers have received substantial pay raises, some as high as 52% in the last 3 years. I propose that we continue investing in our safety by providing an additional $14.5 million for pay raises in the hiring of new law enforcement officers. I'm also again proposing a $2,000 state income tax credit for every active duty, law enforcement officer, firefighter, first responder, and emergency medical technician employed by a public entity. This represents $43.3 million in tax relief for those who put their lives on the line each day to protect our lives and property. A lot of us get up in the morning and put on a tie and go to work. These people put on bulletproof vests, sometimes two. Imagine that. In addition, my executive budget recommends providing the Department of Corrections with a total of $43.2 million in new appropriations to expand cell phone and contraband interdiction, hire new corrections officers, increase medical and mental health services, and pay for deferred maintenance at our 21 prisons. And our director of the Department of Corrections here tonight, I'd ask him please stand and be recognized, Brian Sterling. Thank you, Brian. Animal fighting, especially dog fighting, is one of the cruelest criminal activities in our society. Law officers estimate that most of the people participating in this barbaric activity have long criminal records. My executive budget seeks additional funding to SLED to end this unforgivable savagery. I want you to think about it. South Carolina, we love our dogs, we love our animals, and they love us, and they protect us, and they protect our children. These men are out there training and breeding dogs to fight to the death in South Carolina for money and drugs. We cannot let that go on. We've got to stop that. And this legislature can do it, this General Assembly. Let's do it now. Stop that. Stop it. Our future prosperity requires us to enhance our efforts to protect our land, our history, our culture, and our environment. I do not think that it's a coincidence that previous years of economic growth have followed our efforts to conserve, preserve, and display our unique gifts of nature's abundance. So we should ask, what will South Carolina look like in 100 years? That begs the question, what do we want it to look like in 100 years? 5 years, 10 years, or 100 years? In recent years, we've provided funds, time, and attention for identifying significant properties for preservation and conservation and for flood mitigation. We now have a veritable army of people, public and private organizations, dedicated to these endeavors, including the Conservation Land Bank, Department of Natural Resources, the Office of Resilience, Forestry Commission, Department of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, the Nature Conservancy, the Open Space Institute, the Darla Moore Foundation, the Audubon Society, Francis Marion University, just to name a few. In 2024 alone, this collaborative effort has permanently protected 96,000 of environmentally or culturally significant properties, investing and leveraging $143.5 million in state, federal, and private conservation funds. A few notable successes. Snow's Island is the largest conservation project in Florence County history. It's 7,600 acres and more than 60 miles of river frontage at the confluence of the Lynches and PD rivers will forever safeguard the legendary headquarters of Revolutionary War General Francis Marion, from which he and his militia launched numerous raids successfully on the British and Loyalist troops. Waities Island, the only remaining pristine barrier island on the South Carolina coast without protection from future development, has 1,100 acres at the confluence of the Little River and the Atlantic Ocean. Its inlet, salt marshes, and estuaries make it a virtual natural buffer between the ocean waves and storm surge for our rapidly growing Grand Strand region. And did you know that 50% of the salt marshes on the Atlantic coast are in the South Carolina? We are different. Tiger Oaks, called the Central Park of Spartanburg, has approximately 942 acres located just outside of Spartanburg. It's 1.2 miles of riverfront, connects to land already protected, creating a nearly 1,200-acre upstate conservation corridor. Saluda Bluffs has 1,000 acres located in the bullseye of decades of conservation work, where visitors have a bird's-eye view of more than 10,000 acres of protected surrounding properties in the upstate. Table Rock State Park, Caesars Head State Park, and Jones Gap State Park are located close by. Once again, my executive budget recommends that significant funds, $15.5 million, be appropriated to continue these important and significant preservation and conservation efforts. Finally, next year we will celebrate the sestercentennial, which is the 250th anniversary of the American Revolutionary War. South Carolinians have a unique opportunity to celebrate the decisive role we played in the fight for American independence. There are more than 200 battles and skirmishes that were fought in South Carolina, more than any other colony. Many scholars say the war was won here. So did General Cornwallis with the defeat of Great Britain's Southern Campaign. Our state's history and culture is unsurpassed in the creation of this nation. It is well documented. Where? In books, hundreds of historical markers, monuments, buildings, and homes preserved and dedicated to telling our state's magnificent story. The names of our town, streets, institutions, rivers, and families carry that history forward to this day, and we see us in movies as well. We must protect and preserve our history and heritage. It is why we are who we are and why we are here. It is why we stay here and why others come here. It informs our strengths, our purpose, and our duty. So let me finish now. The next 100 years, what do we want to look like in the next 100 years? Well, I think we've already answered that question. For years, we've invested billions of dollars in time and talent in education to prepare our children to build their lives and economy. And we've invested billions in our lands and waters to protect our health, expand our economy, preserve life in all its forms for its beauty and wonder, for our education and joy, and for the fulfillment of our duty to nourish the Lord's garden. The only difference between then and now is that now we have more opportunity than ever before, and our competition is fiercer and faster than ever before. But we know exactly where we're going, and we are perfectly positioned to succeed. So, let us continue to embrace civility and comity through our thoughts, words, and deeds, and urge people, especially the young ones, to be proud of their state. And let us set our state on a course that will provide the opportunity for prosperity, success, and happiness for generations of South Carolinians to come. Because, ladies and gentlemen, this is the best place in the world to live, work, and raise a family. And the best is yet to come. May God continue to bless America and our great state of South Carolina. Thank you.